Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast, breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system, here is your host, Devin Nunes.
Welcome back to the Devin Nunes Podcast. This is the inaugural edition of the Devin Nunes Podcast being on YouTube. And this week, for our inaugural edition, we have on Laura Trump, who is obviously related to the President of the United States, Donald Trump, but also married to Eric Trump, and also runs Women for Trump of the Trump campaign. Laura, thank you so much. This is really cool for you to agree to be on my first inaugural edition on YouTube.
I am so honored. Thank you for having me. I am connected to President Donald Trump. You are correct. I'm married to his son, Eric, as you just pointed out. And it's been really amazing to be a part of this family and to be part of his campaign now since really 2016. But I could never in a million years have dreamed that I would end up here. But it's awesome, and I wouldn't change it for the world.
So, you know, you're more than just related to Donald Trump. You were very successful before, and you were on Inside Edition. And so talk to us about, just for the audience, where were you born? Where are you from? How did you get into, because you were essentially a reporter, right?
Yeah, well, I grew up in North Carolina, southeastern North Carolina. I'm from a town called Wilmington.
Oh, right on the ocean there. Yeah,
right on the beach. Yeah. Michael Jordan went to my high school, not at the same time as I was there, but I went to Laney High School there in Wilmington where Michael Jordan went. I went to North Carolina State University and decided about 12 years ago now to move up to New York. My parents for sure thought I was going to end up like dead in a drainage ditch somewhere because I knew no one in New York at all, but actually moved up to go to culinary school of all crazy things. So I'm technically, Devin, a pastry chef as well, but I had background in media. I ended up becoming a producer with Inside Edition, where I worked for 5 years. So I was a field producer with them, which meant that I got to go all over the place, travel all across the country, interview really interesting people. And it's funny how what you do in the past sort of all comes back around, and it actually really prepared me, I guess, to do now what I do with the Trump campaign. But yes, you're right. I had a life of my own. I had no idea that everything that I was doing would one day help me be part of the president's campaign, reelection campaign. But I'm, like I said, a pastry chef, a former producer, did some reporting, and now I'm a senior advisor to the Trump campaign.
Well, I'm also a aspiring barbecue expert. Not like, this is California barbecue, not like the barbecue in the South. So people that follow me on Instagram, they can see all the things that I mess around with on the barbecue, but I'm not even close to pastries or anything. My wife likes to keep me out of the kitchen. But people follow me on Instagram. They're always asking me for my recipes, but you know, it's really not any recipes. It's just turn the gas on and, you know, grill it and figure out,
you know,
throw the right
stuff on there. It's much less scientific than baking for sure, but maybe that's the beauty of it. You just kind of let it flow and see what happens. But all right, I'll have to check that out. And if you need any tips in the kitchen, if we could talk to your wife and she could let you in there. I've been trying to teach my son Luke, who's 2.5 years old, since we've been in quarantine, a couple of different recipes. So I'll let you in on some of those.
Well, speaking of being in quarantine, you're in quarantine, I'm in quarantine. So the viewers that are watching, this is from my house. I've got Lee Smith's book behind me about the plot against the president. We've talked about a lot about that on the podcast over the years. And I've got a little gold tractor behind me. So those of you who are used to seeing me at the World Ag Expo, that's just a couple miles away, I'm locked out of there. So I can't even do any news hits from there when I'm on Fox News or other stations. So I'm stuck in my house, just like you, Laura, and all of our audience out there listening. So you're at Inside Edition. Then you go to work in 2016 on the campaign. How did you make that transition in 2016? Did they force you off the air, or did you just decide you were going to go and try to help the president get elected? What was that decision-making process like?
Well, it was actually kind of interesting because having worked there for so long, I understood how the media operated. And I understood that you could take a story that was otherwise relatively benign, change a few words around, kind of insert a soundbite at the specific time you wanted, along with manipulating several other things, and you had a very salacious story. So I remember thinking, well before my father-in-law decided to run for president, you know, some of this stuff is not totally honest, and the way that we portray things aren't always 100% accurate. But that's how it goes. You know, that's how the mainstream media operates. That's how people sell stories. You get people to click on their websites or click onto, you know, their Twitter page or whatever it is. So I understood that well in advance of my father-in-law running for president. The day he decided to run for president, our whole family was there. You might remember we were all there at Trump Tower together when he came down the golden escalator with Melania. Uh-huh. We all stood on stage with him after he announced. And I'll never forget going back to work after that. I took the morning off so I could be there for that. And then I remember going back to work and realizing very quickly, wait a minute, the way that we're showing things is not exactly what happened there. I was physically there. I know what my father-in-law said, and we're taking things out of context. So very quickly, it actually became rather challenging, Devin, for me to work at a place that reported every day on my father-in-law, because let's be honest, from the day in June in 2015 when he announced that he was running for president, that's all anybody was talking about. He was on television every day.
So you were there. You were there right at that opportune time. You were there with the Russians.
Yeah.
So like Vladimir was upstairs. You guys were all plotting with the Russians. And then you came down.
Oh, my God. I can't even tell you how ridiculous all it is. Actually, one of the funny things is before he even came downstairs, before he came down the escalator, we were on in his office on the 26th floor, and we had all these televisions on, different channels, and they were all saying the same thing. Either this is a publicity stunt, Donald Trump is never running for president, oh, he's announcing a new season of The Apprentice. Like, nobody took him seriously, and we were all looking at each other like, what are we missing? Because we know he's serious. So your main question was, how did I get involved with the campaign? I stayed at Inside Edition until August of 2016, and it became challenging. I couldn't work on any political stories. They wouldn't let me report on anything, work on any stories that had to do with the election, with the campaigns, obviously. But my father-in-law actually was traveling down to Wilmington, North Carolina, my hometown, for a rally in August of 2016. I went down with him. And having known the president now, as long as you have now, Devin, you probably can appreciate this. At a certain point, he turned to me and asked me my thoughts on the state. And he was a little frustrated with our state director, I think, at the time. And he kind of sat back and looked at me. And I was like, oh, no, what's about to happen here? And the next thing he said, he goes, you know what? I want to put you in charge of winning North Carolina. Could you do that for me? And of course, I'm like, I don't know anything about politics. I came down here to a rally with you. But of course, I said yes. So I basically went into work the next day and said I need a three-month leave of absence and hit the campaign trail and never looked back. Here I am still.
Never looked back.
Yeah.
And you know, the Russia thing, obviously, is something that I've been, unfortunately, spent the last 3.5 years of my life dealing with the fake news. But just in the last, and a lot of the folks that follow me on the podcast, they'd like to, you know, learn about the Russia hoax. And just this week, what we learned, I was being sarcastic about your meeting with Russians, because what we learned now from the Horowitz report and the things that have now been redacted, that it actually was never the Trump campaign that colluded with Russians. In fact, it was the Clinton campaign that colluded with Russians.
You're exactly
funny how that works. And now you have, now look, we're going to get more into this. We're running an investigation. The Republicans at least are in the House of Representatives. We'll get more information on this. My guess is this was the Clinton campaign and Fusion GPS just trying to dirty up your father-in-law. It started as a dirty trick, like an October surprise. There probably weren't any actual interactions with the Russians as much as they just made it up. So there's a lot to still be learned here. That's why we have to run an investigation.
Funny, Devin, how you don't hear about that on the news any time. Why isn't that out there? I mean, could you imagine if that were the truth for the Trump campaign? People would go crazy. But of course, now that we find out, it was the other side.
This would definitely, they would knock coronavirus off of every television station, and they'd be talking only about how the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians.
Crazy.
So, walk me through, let's step back a little bit in time. What was it like the first time? Like, I remember my first time meeting President Trump, well, at the time, just Donald Trump. What was that like the first time? Like, did you and Eric go on a date and he introduced you to his father? How did that all fall out?
You know, it's always nerve-wracking, I think, to meet anybody that you could possibly call a future in-law, right? When their last name is Trump, it escalates things a little bit. It makes things a little bit more intense. However, I was not given any advance warning by my husband, Eric, then my boyfriend, that I was meeting his dad the day I did. He told me, oh, do you want to go to the U.S. Open tennis tournament? I've got tickets. And I thought, that's awesome. I've never been. Of course, we walk in to a suite, which blew my mind because I'd never been in a suite either. And there was Donald Trump and there was Melania. And I said, oh my gosh, you didn't prepare me. Your dad is here. But Devin, you couldn't have been nicer. He sat right down with me, wanted to know about me, wanted to learn about me. And I was still, of course, kind of freaking out because not only is it Donald Trump, but he's my boyfriend's dad. And he did something that I think is so normal, and it kind of caught me off guard. He goes, you know what? I'm going to get an ice cream. What kind of ice cream do you want? I'll get you one, too. And I thought, oh, my gosh, Donald Trump eats ice cream. And we know that he has two scoops, Devin, right? Always two scoops.
Right.
But it actually put me at ease. I know it's kind of a funny thing, but I will never forget that moment because I was like, okay, that's totally normal. And it's funny how once you sit down with Donald Trump and you get to know him a little bit, he's really more normal than he has any, you know, he should ever be. Anybody in his position should, you would ever think. You can talk to him like a normal person, but that was my first interaction with him. And I was so mad at my husband when we left, my then boyfriend. I said, I can't believe you didn't tell me. But in retrospect, it was actually a good thing. I didn't have time to get nervous. I didn't worry about what I was going to wear, what I'd look like. And he immediately kind of came at me face to face and wanted to know about me. And it meant a lot to me. And I'll never forget that.
And so, you know, one of the things, and I've had some great experiences with the president when he was campaigning, but shows about you and an interview with you. So I'll save that for later. But kind of what you see is what you get. A lot of people ask me, like, what's he like in person? I said, well, pretty much like what you see him when he's sparring with
yep.
the press, you know, in all the meetings that I've been with him. So one of his keys to success, this is just my opinion, is the guy works nonstop. Like, I don't know when he actually sleeps because he doesn't stop working. When you were first introduced to the family was, you know, before he was running for president. Is that how he operated in business too? Did he just work all the time?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that's how you get to be as successful as Donald Trump, is that you are a workaholic in many respects. Even down in Florida, there was always some new deal he was working on, something happening. So even in his time off, he was still working. And I actually see a lot of that in my husband, to tell you the truth. I think he, in terms of business, might be the closest to his dad. But of course, he's always working. He still will call at 11:30 at night and then call again at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, we haven't even slept here. Like, what are you doing? He's up all the time working. Even during the campaign in 2016, he outworked people that were, you know, 20 years old. Everybody was exhausted by the end of a day of several rallies. He kept saying, like, it's too bad we didn't schedule another one. Next time, put another one on my schedule. I have never seen someone with his work ethic and with his stamina in my life. And I don't know that we'll ever see another one quite like him again. But it is the reason that he was so successful as a businessman. And I think it's one of the reasons that he has made sure that the country has been so successful as he's been president.
Well, I know I have a very similar story about getting a call. So I know when the White House is calling, you probably get this too, but every single device that I have, no matter where I'm at, I start getting calls from at my cell phone, my home, my staff starts calling. And, you know, one night I was at dinner and I had just put my phone away. And then one of my staff, and it was like 8 o'clock on a Sunday night, California. So right here, 8 o'clock at night, which is, you know, obviously 11 o'clock at the East Coast. And then one of my staff are calling me and it shows on my home phone. I said, wow, it's, you know, must be an emergency. So I answer the phone and say, hey, the president's been trying to get a hold of you for an hour. I said, I've been eating. And so I called him back, and the first thing I said, what the hell are you doing? It's like 11 o'clock at night. You know, what are you
That's
possibly
him.
Doing?
I know.
But look, it's great for the American people to have somebody who works so hard and under such attack. So I have a couple more subjects I want to talk to you about. So one of the things that Donald Trump has done is he's ripped the Band-Aid off this problem we've had forever, which is just a biased media. What I like to say is 90% of the media are not only left-wing, but they're activists. And in many cases, they're working for these activists. And, you know, you only have to look as far as you had the Clinton campaign paying a racketeering operation like Fusion GPS that then were a bunch of former reporters that then have all these tentacles out to these reporters, and they produce dossiers and plant stories with the media. Just the fact that anybody would entertain working with somebody like a Fusion GPS. I know if I was a journalist, you know, I've never been trained in journalism or anything like that, but I would think, man, this is a little weird to be taking like information from people that, you know, have a track record of not being very trustworthy. If you look at what they've done to Bill Browder and Halverson and others, you know, they've been involved in a lot of scandals. So the fact that Fusion GPS is out there pushing this on the media and they're willing to take it tells me just how corrupt the media is. And I didn't really realize it until, you know, your father-in-law became the president of the United States. And then within weeks after that, I had been a longtime critic of and failures really of our intelligence agencies and the Obama administration's failure to take on Vladimir Putin and the Russian government. And weeks after the election, you know, I found out that, you know, I was somehow some Russian agent of some kind. And yeah. I said, what in the hell is going on here? So I've got my own fake news, funny fake news stories, but what's your favorite fake news story that they've done to you or your husband?
Oh my gosh. Well, they just take things out of context. And I was actually explaining it to you a few minutes ago, talking about my time working with Inside Edition. And I know very well how it works. You have one soundbite that in the context of what you're discussing is perfectly acceptable. But when you trim it down, Devin, to this one soundbite and you give no context, it's very easy to make things seem like something they're not. So I did an interview back during the government shutdown 2 years ago, and I was asked about it, and I gave a perfectly acceptable response. Well, the only thing that the media latched onto is that I said something along the lines of, it's a little bit of pain right now, but in the long run, you know, I think this is really going to benefit the country, meaning yeah. that if the president got through what he wanted to get through, it was ultimately going to be great for the country, right? Well, they took everything I said and made me sound like some disconnected,
careless
Marie Antoinette type yeah. person. This is how they do it. And you see it right there. You're talking about Russia. In 2016, I will tell you, we couldn't have colluded with Iowa, let alone Russia. So whenever this all came out about the fact that, they're saying the Trump campaign colluded with Russia, we were like, at first we were kind of flattered, like that gives us a lot of credit. We're such a green, I'll say that, campaign. None of us had ever done this before. And it was so absurd, the whole Russia collusion hoax. But only $2 million of taxpayer, or I'm sorry, 2 years and $30 million of taxpayer money to figure out that that wasn't the case. Yeah. And there's more to it, as I think you're going to let us all know very soon.
Yeah, and it's still going. And, you know, that reminds me of when the president first came out to California, when he was campaigning, actually, in August of 2016. And that's when I first engaged with him. And I remember thinking back, you know, so then 3 months later he wins and then they're accusing me of being some kind of Russian agent. And then, you know, then they're doing a whole assessment of how the Russians were trying to help him. And I'm sitting there thinking, I remember the campaign. Reince Priebus was there. And I think Rudy Giuliani was out here in California. And then there was like Stephen Miller, who's in the White House now, and the Twitter guy. And that was it. That was the whole campaign.
So I
don't even know how they'd have any time. There weren't enough people working on the campaign to actually have time to collude with Russians, much less somebody in Iowa. Yeah. It's totally, totally ridiculous. And look, just some news this week. I'm sure you've seen it. But speaking of Marie Antoinette, so of course, whatever they accuse you of doing is actually what they're doing. So Nancy Pelosi sitting in her house in San Francisco, the PPP program that's trying to keep people employed right now is out of money. Mitch McConnell tried to bring that up. Everybody agreed to this, you know, a few weeks ago. We have businesses waiting for money so they can pay employees. And meanwhile, we learn that Nancy Pelosi is at her freezer with all this gourmet ice cream. And of course, you know, nobody's covering it, right? I mean, of course, they'll accuse you of something that they're actually doing.
Yep, that's how it goes.
You know, I want to thank you for your time, but for folks that want to get involved in the Trump campaign, because you're running the Women for Trump campaign arm, what do you do on a daily basis and how can people stay informed?
Yeah, well, we are a completely digital campaign right now. Obviously, as you said, you're at home. I'm at home as well in New York, social distancing, quarantining, making sure we slow the spread of coronavirus. But we still are working 24/7 at the campaign. So we are hosting several events a week, virtual town halls, roundtables. You can go to donaldjtrump.com and you can check all of our events. We list them all there. You can RSVP to join up. You can go to TrumpArmy.com and you can become part of our 880,000 now volunteers across the country. Devin, we know everybody's home, so we want you, we're calling you from the Trump campaign. So we would love everybody to get involved, and hopefully we can go back to being together at a Trump rally or coming to you on a bus tour soon. But until then, you can help us out at home on your time now quarantining and social distancing. We would love to have you.
Well, Lara, thank you so much for everything you're doing to help the country. And obviously, I know it's a tremendous burden on your family, because I know you guys get attacked constantly, both you and your husband and Everett, Melania on down. I know that that can't be easy for your children, especially to see some of this. But thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for being my first guest on, on YouTube guest on my podcast. And I love Wilmington. I did a huge event there with, and I'm sure you know this, but we went to the big Civic Center there in Wilmington. It's a newer complex, and we had like 800 people show up because they wanted to learn about the Russia hoax. It was quite amazing.
So awesome.
That was just a few months back.
I want to say thank you to you, too, because you fight every single day for this country. You're an amazing patriot. I'm honored to be on your first guest on the YouTube portion of your show. So thanks for having me, and we'll all keep up the good fight all the way till November 3rd. That's for sure.
That sounds great, Lara. Thank you so much. This is Devin Nunes. We'll catch you next week on the Devin Nunes Podcast and on YouTube.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We invite you to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And remember, you can download this podcast on iTunes or at devinnunes.com.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know. It's no easy road. We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams. It whips the dust up and rains pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We started wondering if we even matter at all. We'll take that hard road to happier days, 'cause we kept our American faith. Now it's not our first trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can't fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take hard road to happier days, 'cause we kept our American faith. As we the people free and strong fight through the dark night toward the dawn, we're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days, 'cause we kept our American faith. We kept our American.
paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.